Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from the University of Central Florida, offering their Master's of Science in Data Analytics program. Designed to enhance skills in data analysis and machine learning, the new Artificial Intelligence track offers specialized courses to deepen understanding of AI technologies and their applications. More at ce.ucf.edu/data.
I'm Sharon Stone. This is Engage from Central Florida Public Media. Tighter mandatory watering restrictions are now in effect for parts of Central Florida due to ongoing drought conditions, according to the St. John's River Water Management District. In Central Florida, the district's order declaring a Phase 3 extreme water shortage applies to all of Flagler County, plus the areas it oversees in Lake and Marion counties. Given orders previously declared by other water management districts, this new declaration from St. John's means all of Lake and Marion counties, plus all of Polk and Sumter counties, are in an extreme water shortage. Clay Corsi is the director of the Division of Water Supply Planning and Assessment with the St. John's River Water District. He explains how we got here.
We have a matrix that we look at of different groundwater levels and rainfall levels that help guide us on which phase of water shortage to dive into. And in this particular circumstance, we had a number of groundwater levels that were below the 10th percentile, which means that over 90% of the time, we would have expected to see groundwater levels higher than what was being recorded. And those conditions lasted for over 4 weeks, which is one of our indicators that trips us into a phase three water shortage. Then also our rainfall levels, which are really the primary driver behind those low groundwater levels that we're seeing, had a number of areas with rainfall below 30 inches. We also had a number of areas in northern Florida in particular with rainfall below 35 inches for an excess of 4 weeks.
What does phase three mean for a typical resident day to day?
So for a typical resident, what that means is primarily that we're going to be asking you during this time of year, during daylight savings time, to only irrigate your landscape one day a week, as opposed to what would normally be allowed, which is to irrigate it 2 days a week. And then also in phase three, one of the things that we've implemented is ask for shorter hours of landscape irrigation as well. Normally you'd be able to irrigate between 4 p.m. and then 10 a.m. We've asked for people to cut that back to 6 p.m. to 8 a.m. as far as the hours that are permitted for landscape irrigation.
Do you find that restrictions do change people's behavior? Do they listen?
I think the vast majority of people, when they hear what's happening with water shortage and understand that if we all chip in and collectively work together to try and decrease the stress that our groundwater withdrawals are putting on the aquifer during the deficit rainfall conditions, that the vast majority of people are willing to help out in that manner.
Could you speak to what kind of situation we might be looking at if people ignored restrictions?
Well, if people ignore the restrictions, what ends up happening is a few different things. Number one is folks that are on private domestic self-supply wells, whose wells are not normally constructed to the same standards, the same depth as, say, a well from a public supply utility that most people are getting their water from. When they have these really low aquifer levels, those wells can start to fail. Then they end up having to get a new well installed. And also one of the things that can happen is saline water upconing in a lot of the areas where we have maybe a thinner freshwater lens on top of the saline water. You can start to have degradation in the chloride levels or salt levels that are in the water that are coming from these wells. So both of those things are things that we'd like to avoid. And that's why we're trying to get the word out to everyone on the efforts that we need to take to conserve water during this time.
So far, you and I have talked about residential use. Can you speak to how this applies to commercial properties or businesses? I'm wondering about the impact of car washes or golf courses, for example.
So the good thing about most commercial car washes is that they've become very efficient in recycling water and do not use a substantial amount of water. So they're not a primary target of the water shortage at this point in time. And a lot of our golf courses use reclaimed water for irrigation, but we have also asked our golf courses to step up and pitch in at this point in time, asking them to limit irrigation of the fairways to only one day a week. then also asking them to limit irrigation of the greens and tee boxes only 3 days a week to try and limit any potential impacts on our aquifer system from golf course irrigation as well.
Could we work our way out of this with one rainy season, or are you dealing with longer-term stress on the water system?
So it could be one very, very rainy season that helps work our way out of this. Right now in North Florida in particular, just to take a step up to a less extreme drought level than what we need, we're looking over the next 3 months and needing somewhere in the neighborhood of 26 inches just to get us into a little less of a severe drought. So this isn't something that's going to be an overnight fix. It's going to take months of above normal rainfall levels to start to dig our way out of the drought condition we're currently in.
What do Central Floridians misunderstand about the water supply in this region, or what do you wish they better understood?
I think in the state of Florida, one of the things that people in general take for granted is we're surrounded by water, right? We're a peninsula that has water on three sides of us. And I think that people don't understand that there's such a small amount of fresh water that we have to use and the importance of conserving that fresh water before we start to harm our natural systems, the springs, the rivers, and the lakes that people love to enjoy in the state of Florida. I think that there's especially folks that maybe come from the more arid West and they come to Florida and see all our wonderful wetlands, springs, and rivers around and just have this false perception that Florida has plenty of water and there's not a need to conserve water. But the wonderful environment and ecology that was created is due to that abundance of rainfall and water that we normally have here in the state of Florida.
We've talked about restricting irrigation. Is there anything else that one person can do that could actually help?
So I think a lot of it, too, is changing the culture and really the behavior of people to where they're really thinking about water conservation. Two of the little facts that I like to throw out there when people ask about things that can be done is one of the things the district's already putting in place, which is that restriction on the irrigation. And that would save each person that participates in reducing their irrigation to just 1 day a week is on average going to save 1,000 gallons of water a week. So that's a really big deal. And then the other thing's going to sound like a little thing, but I think that when I get done explaining, it'll make sense. And that's the simple things like turning the water off when you're having your kids brush their teeth or your grandkids. And what that teaches is the importance of conserving water. Even though it only seems like I'm going to save a half a gallon of water when I do this, it really helps to instill the behavior on water conservation and not taking the wonderful water resources we have in the state of Florida for granted.
Clay Corsi is with the St. John's River Water Management District. 90% of Florida is experiencing drought conditions at various levels. Burn bans are being enforced in many counties, and state officials are expressing concern about fireworks as the 4th of July draws closer. As State Attorney General James Uffmeyer made clear at a Panama City Beach press conference yesterday.
Have fun, have a good time, enjoy some beers over the holidays this summer. But if you're in one of these burn ban counties, which right now is about 2/3, and it does change pretty quickly, please take this seriously.
This drought is being attributed to a prolonged lack of regular rain. Megan Browski is a senior meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. She explains what is accelerating this drought and how long it could last.
We're coming out of the dry season, so we expect conditions to be dry over the late fall and the wintertime months and the early springtime months. But the magnitude to how dry it's been this dry season, I think, is the thing that's been pretty remarkable. If you look at rainfall departures for about the 6 month period in Central Florida, anywhere from like 6 to 10 inches below normal. Now, some spots have seen locally heavy rainfall over the past 6 months, but overall, we're running, 6 to 10 inches below where we should be for the past 6 months.
What conditions are driving that dry weather?
Yeah, I mean, over the wintertime months, we do expect to see at least a couple of cold fronts come through and bring some precipitation. And we really didn't have that over the wintertime months. We didn't have substantial rainfall from cold fronts. It seems like we had the fronts come through and bring us decent cold snaps that and freezes that killed all the vegetation, but we really didn't get a decent amount of our wintertime cold front precip that really didn't happen this year. And also leading into our typical dry season, in some parts of the state, the rainy season last year kind of petered out early. And also we didn't have any tropical cyclones to kind of help to bolster up all of the local waterways and to really saturate the environment. We really didn't have tropical impacts last season. Rainy season kind of died off a little bit early, and it was kind of lackluster in some spots. And then over the wintertime months, again, we didn't have those substantial rainfall events from cold fronts moving on through. I think all of those factors kind of have added up to create the situation we're in now. And then when you talk about the wildfire risk, we had a couple of really good hard freezes this winter that killed off vegetation. And with the dry conditions, the dead vegetation, that's given us a lot of fuel for wildfires across the state.
Does that upcoming rainy season, is that enough to reverse these conditions?
You know, in some areas, it's going to take more than others. The Panhandle in North Florida is certainly in a bad situation. Central Florida isn't in as a dire straits, I would say. So with the rainy season kicking off, that's a good thing. Hopefully we can get just multiple days of rain. I don't like to say, but we are entering tropical season. So if we do get a tropical cyclone, that would help things as well. Something to think about, too, is that we are in an El Nino watch right now. And during El Nino winters, so the winter coming up, we can expect a wetter and potentially or more susceptible to severe thunderstorms too over El Nino winters. So with the upcoming rainy season and the anticipation that we'll have a very strong El Nino winter, I do think that we are going to regain all that rainfall. We might be in a situation where we're talking in 6 months and it's like, you know, oh boy, we're starting to kick off a very, very wet pattern. And it might be, you know, kind of the opposite end of the spectrum. We'll see if that happens. But it's good news that we've got the El Nino kicking up, you know, at least for wintertime precipitation. And then, of course, the summertime sea breeze storms are a very welcome sight now that we're starting to see pop up on radar.
Are you concerned, or how concerning is this compared to previous drought conditions we've seen?
Well, it definitely ranks as one of the more severe situations. You know, you look at the 6 month rainfall departures in the Orlando metro area, and it ranks, you know, the 12th driest in some spots near Orlando metro. I'm looking at the international airport as the 7th driest 6 month period on record. Towards Sanford, it's the 4th driest. So it's not the most extreme, but it certainly is severe for the Orlando metro area and for stations across the state.
Are these conditions something that could become more common in future seasons?
If we see, you know, very strong La Niñas start to set up, if we have a strong La Niña answer this strong El Niño way down the line, we could see another severe drought setting up. That's all really going to depend on multiple things. Tropical moisture arriving to our area, rainy season setting up, and then the wintertime precipitation as well. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I think we are going to come out of this. It's going to take time. Make sure you're respecting bird bans across the area. Avoid outdoor burning. There's a lot of dry tinder around. There's a lot of fuel around for wildfires. And also with the water restrictions in effect, respect those as well, because we need water for the most important aspects of our communities. And we don't need to be power washing or adding water to fountains or filling up our pools. Let's just respect the water restrictions, respect those burn bans. Let's get through this most severe part of the drought. And now as we're entering the rainy season, the summertime months, and then hopefully with this El Nino winter, we can really come out of this drought and be better for it on the other side.
Megan Borowski is a senior meteorologist with the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. While Central Floridians might not be able to force rainfall from the skies, water conservation can serve as a clear path to mitigating the impacts of the drought. Matt Ferrer is a department manager for sustainability and conservation with the Orlando Utilities Commission. He explains why most residential water usage happens outside of the home.
Irrigation is about 50% of potable water use. So people's lawns contribute a lot to how much water that we're consuming on a daily basis. And so the first thing I would recommend is people to really take a hard look at their landscape and figure out when's the last time they really did a self audit of their irrigation system, if they have one. So that could be anything from checking your irrigation timer, making sure it's timed for only two times during the week, We're under 2 day a week watering schedules according to the district. Looking at your heads of your irrigation system, making sure they're not broken, and making sure that they're appropriately zoned and watering what you want to water. How many times have you seen people water the sidewalk? And you definitely want to take advantage of any type of utility rebates that are available for irrigation timers. We have one that's available to customers, up to $200. Another thing to consider is most irrigation systems have what's called a soil moisture sensor. So anytime you receive any type of rain, your system should be able to be triggered to not water. And that could save a ton of water as well, along with just checking leaks, you know, from your hose bib, leaks in your hose that might have a leak. These are all things that you can do to really lower the amount your lawn is consuming. And then there's a lot of things that we can do on the inside, which I can talk about.
Yeah, please. What are the things that you can do on the inside?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the other things that we do offer a rebate for is we offer a smart monitoring device. This is a device that goes onto your water line and can actually tell you if you have a leak in your home. And you can have an app that you can look at insights. So a smart monitoring device is something that we recommend every home should have. You could also remote shut off water if you have a leak and you're not home with this device. I've also heard you can get some insurance discounts by having this. But other things that you can actually do in your home right now, if you don't have one of these devices, is check for leaks that may be coming from your appliances. One of the most common things that we see is toilets. Toilets leak all the time, especially older toilets in older homes, and they use a lot of water. So you'll want to go ahead and check that your toilet isn't continuously running. You might hear, if you don't know if your toilet's running, if you're walking by your bathroom and you hear kind of water or a trickling sound that is just consistent, that's probably something in the tank of your toilet, usually a flapper, that's left open and water is just continuing to fill that tank, and you're wasting hundreds of gallons just by not replacing such a small little device in the toilet tank. You can replace your toilet for free. OUC offers $125 for you to get a brand new toilet. When we're thinking about inside, you're thinking about your shower heads as well, making sure that those are efficient and they're not leaking. That goes with kitchen and bathroom faucets. You're thinking about your dishwashers, making sure you're loading your dishwashers all the way and running full loads. That goes the same as your clothes washer, doing full loads on your clothing washing as well. And goes without saying, behavior has a lot to do with how much water that you're using in the home. Everything from just turning off the water when you're brushing your teeth or turning off the water in between as you're washing dishes if you don't have a dishwasher. These are all things that you can be doing in the home right now. You know, there's another thing that you can do if you have a meter key. This is something that actually turns off your water meter at the home. And I only suggest you think about turning off the water to your home if you're suspecting a leak somewhere in your home, but you can't find it. You can turn off the water, and then that meter, if you turn off the water, you're going to be able to determine if there's a leak in the line. And so these are just little things that you can do to figure out if you have leaks and to correct them. And I also want to say that one thing that you can do that's probably the easiest thing that anybody can do is call OUC. If you're an OUC customer, we're sending out an expert to do an audit of your home. We do an assessment, a full walkthrough, and take a look at all these things. And we'll give you a report and give you recommendations of what you can do right now to save water. If people just decided to use less water in general, so for example, wanted to put a little shower timer in their shower and say, hey, look, we're only going to take 5 minute showers, that's one way to be a little bit more conservative than just tweaking your systems. And speaking of a shower timer, you know, I mentioned that OUC offers free water conservation audits where we send an expert out in your home. We also offer, during those audits, free water conservation kits. We'll give you two efficient shower heads. We'll give you a little toilet flapper in case it's leaking in your toilet. We'll give you one of those sticky shower timers. I can't tell you enough how many parents have come to me and say, I love these shower timers because my kids take these huge long showers, and this is a way for them to track that they should be taking shorter showers. It also comes with dye tablets that you can put in your toilet to see if there's a leak.
Matt Ferrer is a conservation and sustainability manager with OUC. Engage is a production of Central Florida Public Media. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. Richard Copeland is our senior producer. I'm Sharon Stone. You can reach us anytime with questions, comments, or story ideas. Send an email to engage@cfpublic.org. Thanks for listening.